From an early age, we're all immersed in sport. For some, it fails to ignite a spark inside us, but for those of us who catch the fire, it's the beginning of a lifelong journey filled with highs and lows, which all matter far more than they should. After all, it's just a game, we're told. Sport is a certainty, it's a point of reference in an increasingly uncertain world, and the bonds formed with either sport in general or a hometown club transcend both time and generations. Today, much of what sport has always meant to true fans has been somehow lost in a blizzard of corporate communications, fireworks, and froth. The attachments that were once so strong seem more trivial in the global age of televised sport as entertainment. What was once authentic has become increasingly staged. In this podcast, we'll get back to the things that sport has always meant to true fans. We'll take you from the boardroom to the dressing room to the pitch, but we'll do it not as a corporate communication, but as true fans of sport, and we'll do it with authenticity. We'll be honest, and we'll speak our minds. This is a podcast for true sports fans, and the one thing all fans have in common is a passion for the game. Now, we certainly don't mean to cause any offence, so if you find yourself taking any, just shrug it off and get back in the game, because this is about the game, and the game is bigger than all of us.
We've got some fresh new young talent doing some things that I know you haven't heard before.
One, two, three, listen.
Oh, there we go.
There we go. Good morning, Grant. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm very good. Where do I find you this morning? I must admit, I'm finding it difficult to keep up where you are.
You're finding it difficult. I swear to God, I've missed about three flights in the last month because I just didn't know to be at the airport. I am back in the sunny Cayman Islands.
Or as James says, Cayman.
Cayman, yes. Cayman.
What are you doing in the Caymans?
Taking a breather from being elsewhere for a little while. It won't be long. I will be I'll be back on the road again next week.
But can I ask you something seriously, Grant?
Yeah, go on.
You know, I'm asking, I'm struggling to work out. I mean, like, you were in the Carolinas, you were in San Francisco, you were in Utah. Then you're doing like interviews in undisclosed airport hangars.
No, that wasn't me. That wasn't me. All my airport hangars are disclosed, Roger. Fully disclosed.
But I mean, can I ask you, are you actually a spy?
You're not the first person who's asked me that, Roger.
I'm serious. Are you with MI6?
Well, if I said yes, I'd be the worst spy in history. If I say no, you'll probably assume that I'm the best spy in history. So let's just leave it at no comment, shall we?
No comment. But I didn't notice on Twitter this morning that one of your many, many followers said that this person's wife was very disappointed that you hadn't been considered for the new James Bond role. It all starting to make sense to me.
You know, listen, I tell you, if we ever reach the point where I was in the running to be James Bond, they've decided to take the franchise in a completely different direction.
Listen. Anyway, it's good that we're... It's a while we haven't spoken, so it's good we can catch up. And I wanted to start something this week with a new segment, if you're up for it. The segment is called How Screwed Are Fulham?
Well, look, it's definitely a segment that will change every week, but only in one direction, I would imagine.
Well, I mean, I think we need to go in a little bit deeper to let you articulate your pain to the listeners in a way that's authentic, where we can feel how much you're suffering in this moment in time.
Well, do you know what? Look, the first thing I'll say is when you're a Fulham fan, and you've been a Fulham fan as long as I have, suffering is part of it. We get very good at suffering. So suffering for us isn't like suffering for a Chelsea fan or an Arsenal fan who have a bad season or who lose a couple of games. Suffering for us is a way of life, Roger. So yes, of course, it's painful to watch. But only more so, I think, because of the high hopes that we had after last year.
Yeah.
You know, the team were magnificent. They were solid at the back. They were exciting going forward. They scored lots of goals. And now we're terrible at the back. We're awful going backwards, and we let in a lot of goals. So I don't know what's happened. Obviously, they bought a whole bunch of players, all of whom looked on paper to be good signings. And I suspect it's trying to blend them into a team under the spotlight of the Premier League that is the source of the problems. But I like that Jokanović has come out this week, the manager, saying that it's the player's fault, not his. He's a fantastic coach. So I think that probably means he will be the first Premier League manager to get sacked this season.
Yeah, yeah, that's never a good sign.
Which is a shame, because I say he did an amazing job with that team last year. He's a good coach, did an amazing job last year, and it'll be a shame, but I suspect with another international break coming up next week, the Liverpool game at Anfield tomorrow will be the last time we see the moody Serbian in charge of the team.
Well, talking about that game, you know that I do a lot of work in the kind of like quant algo world of sports data. It's a couple of companies.
I did not know that you did a lot of work.
Well, that's also true. And one of the reasons I don't do a lot of work is that I managed to make a fair bit of money on trading, let's call it trading, sports results. Because so there's a lot of guys out there now that use advanced maths, Poisson probabilities, quant analysis, risk management, derivatives trading stuff, and they come up with pricing. Are you interested to hear what they've told me about your game with Liverpool and what I should do?
Listen, I'm very happy to tell you what you should do.
Well, anyway, all I will say is that the over 2.5 goals is at a very, very short price.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Is that right? So this is a chance for Fulham fans. If we only let 2.5 goals in, that'd be a good game for us.
It was a good price if you feel that you're going to like shut up shop. I think there's a good price to take the other side of that trade.
Listen, Roger, the way we're playing, we are the only team in history that actually could let in half a goal.
I was thinking about that this morning. I think I could go down to the bar below my house here in Italy and pick up 4 random boys and get a better back 4 than you've currently got.
Listen, Rog, if you spend your weekends going down to the bar and picking up random boys, that's your business. It's nobody else's. I think we should. I think we should move on to the goal on goal segment.
All
what
right.
do you reckon?
Yeah, yeah. Off you go. You go first.
Oh, you're gonna let me go first. All right. I'm gonna start with my goal this week, which will take place at 3 p.m. Eastern time this afternoon. So by the time anyone gets to listen to this, unfortunately, it will have been played, but you will get another chance on November the 24th, and that is the Copa Libertadores final.
Oh, you've stolen
which for
mine.
The first time
you've stolen
in,
mine.
In six, excellent. That's payback for you. Oh. Which for the first time in 68 years of playing it is going to feature River Plate and Boca Juniors, arguably the two fiercest rivals in football. The Super Classico, as it's called, obviously we have to go one higher than the Classico, so this is the Super Classico, is an extraordinary event. I mean, if you Google the Super Classico, the first thing you will find is the 10 best fights from Classico.
Magnificent violence, magnificent violence.
Oh, it's a sporting event that divides a city, it divides a nation, it divides teams. It turns family into mortal enemies. It creates fights. It's led to umpteen murders. It's something that you really have to see to believe. Now they've banned away fans. So it'll be interesting to see how many of each team sneaks into the other's ground to watch it, because we know that they won't be able to keep quiet no matter what happens. But this rivalry, the Superclásico rivalry, is everything that sport should be about. It's a lot of things that sport shouldn't be about, but it's a truly extraordinary event in the sporting calendar. And so to have these two teams playing in the Copa Libertadores final for the first time in its history is going to be remarkable. And I, for one, cannot wait. As I said, if you've missed the first game, which is, as we record this on November the 10th, it's this afternoon, but the second leg will be on November 24th, and I would urge you to find a way to watch it, because there will be fireworks. I think we can safely say that.
Completely agree. So now I'm struggling a little bit. So while I think of my own goal, I'll go to my own goal, which is a nice segue into that, because I'd like to compare the authenticity of that game. And as Grant says, you can see on...
Don't you do it, Rog. Don't you do it. Don't you take mine.
Well, here we go. If you look at that game, you can definitely say that it's authentic. It's real. It's everything that traditional football is all about, because we are talking about deep, deep tradition. And we had this week the Football League story, that had various different strands, and maybe we'll get into more of one of those. But I'd like to start with the story about PSG, who apparently have performance-related contracts and clauses with their players regarding how the players salute the fans before and at the end of the game, i.e. there's financial relationships with how they have the relationship and the connection with their own fans. Now, if there's anything further away than everything that we want sport to be about, it's this. And, you know, you link it to what you've heard all week with Football Leaks, whether it's about artificial sponsorship contracts to make them eligible for financial fair play, and that's Paris Saint-Germain, Man City as well, by the way, or whether it's about the racial profiling of their academy, or whether it's about Saudi Arabia offering $25 billion for FIFA to set up a rival Super League, or whether it's the European clubs in their own Super League. It's all going in the direction that is the complete opposite of Boca River. This isn't what we signed up for, Grant. This isn't football the way that we would like it to be. And honestly, it's as if the whole product under these gentlemen just now is for sale. It's got a big for sale sign on it. So the other part of this, which was for somebody like myself quite annoying, was seeing so many of these erudite journalists in England talking about how this idea of the European Super League was in some way a betrayal of the traditions and tapestry of football, where these people, as far as I can see, for the last 20 years, have said absolutely nothing about the fact that Ajax, Celtic, Anderlecht, Benfica, Porto, Beşiktaş, AEK Athens have all been totally marginalised in this great circus of football. While it was them, all the writers for The Mail and The Independent and The Times and The Guardian, no word about it at all. Once it starts talking about ripping up the English fabric of the game, all of a sudden it's a betrayal. So this whole week for me around Football Leaks and everything that was in it and the whole reaction to it has been a massive own goal.
Well, look, Rog, I mean, I got to say, this is the direct result of everything that I've certainly been talking about in terms of this veneer that gets put on football and the way everything is done to make it a spectacle. And you and I have disagreed about that. You know, you enjoy some of the spectacle. But yeah. I think the more you try to create something a spectacle, the more you try to fabricate any aspect of a sporting competition. I understand the reasons. You want to make it more engaging for the fans. Okay, fine. But for the real fans, the engagement, what makes it so compelling is the fact that it's pure competition, and you have your allegiances, you have your alliances, you have your own club, and you live and die by the results. So why should it be a surprise to anybody that if you take that and you decide that, you know what, we can put a flash layer on this and we can have fireworks when the teams come on, or bubbles, or an eagle flying onto a guy's shoulder, and we can energize the fans and get, why should it surprise anybody that it ends up with clubs paying players to salute the fans a certain way? I mean, of course that's where it's going. And this is not even the thin end of the wedge. We're a little way down the wedge now.
We are.
It's only going to get worse, Roger. As long as this is what it's about, as long as it's about business, as long as it's about engaging fickle fans who don't care about the teams, who don't care about the clubs, who, frankly, many of them don't care about the game. They just want to see
celebrity,
a guy
and Hollywood,
who they have been sold on the idea that he should be their hero, do heroic things. That's where this is going, I'm afraid. You know, that's why we're doing this podcast. That's why we're talking about the things we're talking about, because that authenticity is going to be bled out of not just football, but every sport. And I, for one, have not even flinched at any of the revelations that I've read in this Football League story. Not one. Every single one of it is like, well, yeah, of course. So I agree with you 100%. But it's A, it's no surprise. And B, to quote the great Celtic player, Karen Carpenter, sadly, we've only just begun.
Yeah. Yeah. Talking about Celtic. Well, yeah. Talking about Celtic, let me link to that, because Celtic had a good week where they hosted Leipzig, which is quite a new team in the grand scheme of things. They were only set up in 2009. And after the game, the Leipzig media and fans came out with a very authentic tribute to what Celtic is. Quotes, "Celebrate themselves, their loyalty, their songs, the history of the club founded in 1888 by the Irish clergyman Brother Walfred looms over everything, where the score is a decorating accessory and the big picture much, much more important." You know, that's why I still follow Celtic, because whatever else happens, it's got a history that is beautiful. It represents something that's much more. And you know, then this morning I read that maybe Liverpool's for sale and John Henry is thinking of selling it, and you've got the usual suspects from Arabia that are interested. Honestly, it's just getting a little bit too much. You know, it seems as if the game, the sport that we love, is some kind of little pawn in some geopolitical fight between Saudi Arabia and Qatar and Sarkozy and the World Cup in 2022. It plays in winter. When you stand back a second, you want to actually be sick, because this isn't what we know. And it's really sad that the kids that are coming up these days, it's all they know. They don't know the way it used to be, and the fact that Derby County and Notts Forest and teams like that could, over a period of 3-4 years, make themselves double winners of the Champions League, of the European Cup. We're a million miles away from that now.
Oh, look, I don't know what you want me to say. I mean, I agree. And this is why I get energised and saddened by a lot of the stuff that you know, let's be honest, Rog, that you're a supporter of a lot of this commercial stuff because you understand that where the fans are and what needs to go. But I think in catering for those fans, as I've said before, in catering for the transient fan and the marginal attention span, you are just digging away at the foundations of the game. And at some point, it's going to collapse under its own weight, and there won't be any real fans left to pick up the pieces, because it's been hollowed out. And it's a great point of sadness for me, and it's something that you kind of watch in slow motion. You can see it happening. There's nothing you can do about it.
Nothing.
That's the sad thing, except as we're doing with these podcasts, to talk about it and try and keep that authenticity alive somewhere. Because to quote your great countryman John Laurie, I think we're doomed.
Well, you know, let's hear what Murray's got to say about that when he comes on, because he's taking a sport, Formula One, that could be accused of some of those things, or it could be said that, you know, Bernie Eccleston was so out of it in terms of doing what you need to do with a modern audience that they're only doing the right thing. So you're right, Grant. I'm not completely where you are on this. I think there is a way to actually serve the fans better by knowing them better, by knowing who they are, what they like, whether they're a casual flat fan or whether they're a hardcore, you know, watch anything fan. So the industry is not all bad and going in the wrong direction. It's, in theory, knowing fans better to serve them better. But what I don't like is all this geopolitical stuff. It's wrong. You know, what's that got to do with it? Who are these fuckers? You know, like, this isn't the way it's meant to be.
It's not, Roger, but traditionally sport is how you immediately get yourself in front of and ingratiate yourself with large, hardcore audiences, faithful, solid audiences. Now, I don't think they're thinking about the effect they're having on those audiences in this hollowing out process. But, you know, look, we have got Murray Barnett coming up, and it's going to be a fascinating conversation. But let me ask you this. Formula One, All the glitz, all the glamour, all the stuff that has been done to make it more exciting and accessible for the fans, etc. I guarantee you, real racing fans would prefer to watch 25 guys in 1.6 Ford Focuses racing each other with identical cars around the track, because it's the purity of the racing. You know, ask anybody who their favorite racing driver is, and I'd be amazed, because it's the year we've grown up in. But Ayrton Senna is going to come up tops every time with anyone that's watched Formula One through the years. I mean, obviously Jim Clark, I'm sure you'll stand up for, but that footage is not really available. But Ayrton Senna was a natural driver, an extremely talented man who drove what today would be a very basic car brilliantly. And people loved him for it, and they loved his talent and his skill. But had Ayrton Senna been driving the exact same Ford Focus as all the other drivers, I'm willing to bet you that his talent would have taken him to the finish line probably even more often than it did driving the McLaren that he drove.
That's true. And to be fair to Formula One and what Murray's trying to do now, they're trying to level the playing field so that it's not just about who's got the biggest budget to make the best car. I think they would ideally love the potential winner of a Grand Prix to be from 5, 6, 7 possible manufacturers. So, you know, Murray will talk about that a little bit later. And I think that's a good example of people trying to find the balance. After Murray, we're going to continue this theme. We're going to have Steve Martin come on, who's one of the top guys in the whole sports marketing area, with MC Saatchi. And then after that, we've got Giles Morgan, who as head of sponsorship at HSBC, he's seen so much of what works and what doesn't work with authentic messaging. You know, he's a guy that will not get around what they think is fake. So what I'm saying is everything that's come out of Football Leaks this week reeks of fakeness. It reeks of soft power. It reeks of everything that we detest. And as you say, I've had the chance more than you to actually be behind the curtain, and none of it was a surprise. In fact, the more and more you scratch, the more and more you will see what's wrong. You know, we talked about Mancini. I don't know whether this is true or not, but Mancini having a double contract when he was manager at City and also with an Arab club. Then you get into the whole bung culture and offshore payments. Image rights, going through Jersey fund companies. You know, Grant, you go down this rabbit hole and you get a million miles away from what you and I are going to enjoy this afternoon watching our football, and whether it's in Argentina or whether it's at Anfield.
Well, Roger, I mean, let me ask you this. What happened to Sepp Blatter?
What do you mean, what happened to Sepp Blatter?
What's happened to him? After he got ousted from FIFA?
Nothing.
Yeah. Nothing.
Well, that's the same as the guy Jimmy Diamond and all those guys at the big banks after 2008. Nothing happens to these guys, and that's why the little guy gets angry, because, you know, okay, you've been a bad guy in life, but if you get caught, you should pay a significant price. Guys like Blatter and the other people, they just walk away. You know, like Jerome Valk, who is Blatter's commercial guy, has been reincarnated 2 or 3 times. It's the way it is.
It is the way it is. Look, you know, you and I could go down this rabbit hole for hours, but I'm gonna bring things down even more with my own goal, I guess, seeing as that's all I've got left. And that is, and I'm very conflicted about this, Roger. I've got to say, I am conflicted about this. I'm using it as my own goal. In some ways, I'm happy about it, but in some ways, I'm not. And on balance, it's going to be my own goal. And that is Wayne Rooney's return to the England team. For the game against the USA on the 15th of November. Because, you know, Rooney's 33 years old. He's playing in the USA, and they are going to give him an honorary cap, 120th cap, in the friendly, ironically, against the USA. Now,
not ironically.
Yeah, exactly. I was being ironic with my ironically.
Yeah.
But, you know, on the plus side, they're calling the game the Wayne Rooney Foundation International. So Rooney gets honoured, and his charity is going to make a lot of money. So that's great. He's graced the England game. He's graced the England team. He's England's record goal scorer. You know, 53 goals in 119 internationals is an extraordinary record. And I'm a huge fan of Rooney's as a player and as a talent. But this idea that you kind of give out a cap, you and I both know there have been plenty of other players who were near milestones and didn't come back. And the reason for this is, of course, the fact that he is playing in the United States. And this is another way to put a little fake veneer on the game and hopefully boost the game in America. And, you know, you can argue the toss and say, look, surely anything that boosts the game in America is good for the game, and so they should let him do this. But again, if you're going to boost something and begin that boosting by being inauthentic, what chance do you have of the authenticity that is everything that sport is built upon taking hold in a nation that is really starting to take to soccer? And hopefully seizing it, even if it's just on the fact that there are no commercial breaks. It's 2 45-minute halves. It runs, you know, in America that's unusual and it's surprising. And I think it's a big reason people are taking the game up. They know it's going to be an hour and 45 minutes from start to finish, including the break. They know they're not going to get bombarded with stuff every 2 minutes going through. There aren't going to be frequent stops. And it is that authenticity. So to give Rooney his extra cap, I guarantee you that if this game on the 15th of November hadn't been against the US, he wouldn't be playing. It just, again, it smacks of inauthenticity. And as much as I love Rooney and as much as I'm happy for him, I think it devalues an England cap. I think it's inauthentic, and it's my own goal for the week.
I don't think I can disagree with anything there.
Oh, yes, you can if you try, Roger. Come on, we know you're an argumentative bastard.
No, but listen, in all of these tests, I always use a technique, which is, you know, take the principle to the extreme and see if it still holds. So if you're saying we're doing this for marketing the game, why don't we go the whole way and put Beckham back in a strip?
You know? Well, you?
Well, no, because, you know, he owns an American team now. The wonderfully named Inter Miami, I think. Jesus, who came up with that? But what I'm saying, take it to the extreme and see if it still holds. What was it? Was it Churchill or somebody else that said to somebody's wife, would you sleep with that man for £100? And she says, of course not. And he says, would you sleep with that man for 10 million? And she says, maybe. And he says, well, we've established what you are. We just don't know yet what your price elasticity
exactly
is.
About the price. Exactly right.
So we've established here that this is a commercial exercise. It's a marketing exercise. We just don't know how far they're prepared to go. Rooney probably, for them, stands this side of the line. Beckham is clearly ridiculous because he's not in activity anymore. So it's wrong. And I'd love to hear what Southgate said behind closed doors about all of this, because he strikes me as a decent guy that knows what things are about and what he's trying to do. And I can imagine, I think, how he'd have reacted to that.
Well, look, particularly as he had the balls to drop Rooney. You know, he was the guy when Rooney was the star of the team and England's most honoured player. Southgate was big enough to drop him and say, look, you know, he's the past, he's not the future. The country got behind Southgate's future and playing the young players through the World Cup, and now here we go. So, you just know that this is the result of tremendous pressure from the top for him to put this in the team. This was not Southgate's idea. And here you have a young manager who's being forced into authenticity, inauthenticity at the very start of his England career. And you just wonder where that goes. And I think you're right. I mean, it is a question of, we know what you are. It's just, we're just tackling over the price now. So I don't know. I'll be applauding Rooney for everything he's done. But, you know, I could have done that if he'd wandered on at halftime and waved to the fans.
Exactly. Listen, I'm going to take us up a little bit now because
good lad.
I think it's important because we're getting into a loop here, Grant.
You can always rely on a Scot to lighten the mood, Roger.
Yes. And the way I'm going to do it is with a character that I think is quite like Scotland, in the sense that I'm going to talk about Marcello Bielsa.
Okay.
There's a clip that's gone around this week of a Leeds United game where the other team, I can't remember who it is, it's not important, they're on a break.
Yes, I've seen this.
You saw that?
Fantastic.
And, you know,
fantastic.
Fantastic. So what you've got here is one guy on his own.
Well, describe the clip for the people that haven't seen it, though.
Okay, so you've got one guy, one attacker of the opposing team, you know, probably getting into the last third, threatening the goal, but he's well covered. I would say he's well covered by a couple of Leeds United defenders. And then you see another five Leeds players running the length of the field to get back. And I'm not saying jogging. They are busting a gut to get back to help in a situation that one would normally say very little danger, relatively well covered. And you look at that, and at that moment, you probably, going back to what I was saying earlier, could easily go down to the bookmakers and say, championship to Leeds this year. And that's Bielsa. You know, I'm not sure how many people know who Marcelo Bielsa is and what his story is. And I think, you know, it links a little bit to where you started with Boca and River, because he's Argentinian. He is a guy who, despite coming from quite a well-to-do family, so it's not the whole, you know, hunger gives you determination line. This is quite a well-to-do guy who has understood what's important in life, which for him is hard work, attention to detail, suffering with your team, making sure that the values in the team through from 1 to 11 are consistent, where you kind of die for each other. He's taken that through a club career. He famously did it for the Chile national team and everything that they accomplished. With a little bit of different luck, they could have very easily won that World Cup instead of going out to Brazil. And that's Bielsa. And you know, then you start looking a little bit about who this guy is and the impact he's had in other people. Murray's going to talk about Pochettino, because Murray's a Spurs fan, and how much he likes Pochettino. Where does Pochettino get that from? He gets it from Marcelo Bielsa. He calls him a second father. Everything that I've learned and everything I'm trying to do comes from Bielsa. How come Guardiola today is a manager? Because at the time he was thinking of doing it, he flies out and spends a whole day with Bielsa asking, what should I do? And if I do want to be a manager, what are the basic principles that I want to install in my team and in my philosophy? And guess what? Guardiola's team become famous for high energy pressing, commitment together. It's not so much about Messi and Iniesta and Xavi, yeah, sure. But, you know, Guardiola was different because of that high press. And then you look at your history and you go from Bielsa, who himself will say he was influenced by Rinus Michels, the 1970s coach, Cruyff, and it's all a fil rouge. You know, so this is the tradition of football, not the Johnny-come-latelys that we talked about 20 minutes ago. This is the tradition that goes from Rinus Michels through Cruyff, through Bielsa, Guardiola, to Pochettino. And that clip, if anybody hasn't seen it, go and have a look. Do a little
bit.
We'll
put it up on the Are You Not Entertained Twitter feed, because I think you're right. It is a great clip.
You know, so that's my goal of the week. And, you know, I'm quite passionate about that, because it's the complete opposite of everything we've heard with football leagues. This is absolutely the tapestry of tradition that unless we keep hold of, we will end up with a very, very sloppy, celebrity-based, Hollywood-type entertainment product. And that's what none of us want.
Roger, let me ask you a question, because I watched that clip and my thinking went along the same line as yours, but riddle me this, Batman. Why is Bielsa managing Leeds United? Why is he not managing Juventus or Inter or even Fulham? I hope you're listening, Shad Khan. Why is he managing Leeds United?
He's a difficult character. He doesn't compromise. You know, remember the first podcast with Pat and balance and finding who controls the club. It can't all be with the coach. It has to be the director of football, the CEO, too much money involved. Bielsa's a kind of like my way or the highway type guy. Doesn't compromise. And that's not everybody's cup of tea. Simple as that, Grant.
Or to put it another way, he's authentic.
Yeah, I mean, from what I've just said for the last 5 minutes, you know I love him and he's authentic.
Yeah.
But you know...
That's my point, Rog. He's everything that we're wistful about. He's a guy who doesn't compromise. He has his values. He knows how football should be played, and he won't compromise. He's going to get his teams to do what he wants. And because of those things, he's not managing one of the big clubs, because to the big clubs, it's just business now. That connection has gone. Yes, they want the fans. They want to connect with the fans. But that's in a marketing speak way. They don't want the club in fans' hearts. They want the club in fans' wallets.
Well, yeah, I'm sure there's truth in that. But let me try and be fair to them. They're not here to defend themselves. What they would say is that guys like Bielsa, like Mourinho, like Conte, like Sacchi even, are what today is called impact managers. They come in, they make that immediate change in culture, in attitude, but it's pretty scorched earth, you know. Like, and then when they leave, you say, "Well, that was great, but what the hell happened?" And you know, maybe that's not the best thing if you're trying to build something over X years. So I would have him if I bought a club. That's one of the first guys I would go to, and I would say, "This is the club that I'd like you to take intellectual ownership of." But it's not the way everybody wants to do it. I love these kind of managers. And, you know, let's link it a little bit to Mourinho at the weekend, in midweek, when he goes to Juventus Stadium, gets insulted for 90 minutes, does the classic Jose thing of like having a completely undeserved result, and gives a little bit back, you know? Just like Neil Lennon did the other week, gave a little bit back to the fans. And that's what you want. I'm not one of these guys that says, "Oh, you're a role model. You need to be careful." You know, give it back. Have a little bit of balls. And you know, that's Marcelo Bielsa.
Yeah, look, right. And sadly, the sort of end of that story is that a couple of days later, Mourinho, tail between his legs, apologises for having a go at the fans and makes excuses about, well, you know, they have a go at my family, and so I'm going to get back to them. Why? I guarantee it wasn't because he wanted to apologise, because someone tapped him on the shoulder and said, "Listen, Jose, you've got to get out there and apologise."
It was funny. Did you see that thing with Souness? This was really funny. It's because all of us we preach and sometimes we don't walk the talk. Souness is on the TV and he's criticising Mourinho's behaviour. Which, by the way, if you know the story in Italy of Inter Milan and Juventus and those years, and it's all completely understandable what happened in midweek, and none of it is a scandal. So Souness is on a bit of a high horse saying, "What should you be doing?" And he's in a studio with Mike McCarthy, who very cleverly points out, "Graham, old chap, Graham, were you not the boy in Turkey that ran out and put a flag and nearly brought the whole of Istanbul into a citywide riot?"
Yes, I remember that.
all of us are hypocrites in one way or another.
I didn't see that clip. What did Souness say?
He just kind of like shrugged it off, I think. The clip that I saw ended before I saw his reaction. But you look it up. It's Mick McCarthy, Souness, and it's a couple of days ago. I'm sure you can get it.
See, Mick McCarthy, there's another authentic guy. All right. Well, look, that's enough of us. We have a guest coming up in the next episode. Rog, why don't you introduce him?
Murray Barnett is somebody I've known for a while. He's a proper football supporter, a proper fan. But like myself and like so many of the people that will come on, he works in an industry where things are changing and he has to try and find that balance. He's got a huge history in the world of rugby, where he's contributed for many years to the evolution of that sport. And he'll talk about that. And now he's taken those skills into the Liberty Media world of Formula One, the post-Bernie era of Formula One, where, as we mentioned a little bit earlier, they're trying to take that sport into a different audience and change its business model. And the interesting thing about Murray is that he will talk about all of that from the anchors of being an authentic sports fan. And I think that's going to be fascinating.
For any older fans out there, it's the post-Bernie Eccleston era, not the post-Bernie Clifton era, just to be clear.
All right, Grant. So let's introduce Barry.
There's a TV company that will remain nameless that had a very big tournament recently. And I was talking to their head of sport and I said, oh, so how did you arrive at those pundits and the people that you're doing your shows? And he said, well, I picked this guy who's a very, very well-known sports person. He's absolutely rubbish, but I know he's going to bring in, you know, X 100,000 extra viewers for me in each program. And I just thought that that's a really sad way of having to look at it. When I was working in rugby, that we did the Rugby Sevens event at Twickenham, which was hugely popular, selling out Twickenham Stadium. And the problem with drinking was so severe that in the end, what they ended up doing was stopping the fancy dress theme. And it was because they discovered that basically when people wear a fancy dress outfit, it allowed them to behave like a complete idiot. And it's funny how, you know, when their kind of faces were literally covered, it gave them a license to be completely crazy. One of the most heartening things for any sports fan has to be when you see any player on a team score and you see the other 9 outfield players rushing over to celebrate with him in a, you know, genuine happiness for a player scoring. And I think you see that almost every goal that Spurs scores, that they seem to really, really, really enjoy playing for each other. And I think that's the spirit that Pochettino has engendered in the team. Grid girls are completely anachronistic. You know, in this generation of Me Too, it just didn't seem like that this was something that was 21st century. And for, you know, a sport that presents itself as the most technologically advanced, it struck us that this was an area where we were planting ourselves firmly in the sort of 1960s or 1970s. And it's not about not having sort of glamorous people on the grid. It's about them having a function and a purpose and a reason to be there. And you may have seen what we did in Monza this year. We had, you know, opera singers, we had waiters, we had all kinds of fun and different things which you haven't seen before. And the decision to sort of do away with grid girls was done in a management meeting on a Tuesday, and it was announced on a Wednesday. And it was very much like, okay, we've made this decision, let's just get on with it.
Well, between now and the chance you get to listen to the fascinating Murray Barnett, you can obviously follow us on Twitter, which we'd love you to do, and share the podcast and share the Twitter handle, which is at EntertainedR, that's E-R-E, sorry, A-R-E, not the letter at the end, at EntertainedR. If you're so inclined, you can follow me on Twitter at TTMYGH.
And if you want to follow myself, it's RPM Como, as in the lake.
As in the lake. All right.
That's fine. I think that's us.
3, 2, 1, stop.